Hello everyone, welcome to A Craft of the Draft video. In this video, we're going to go through our top 60 power rankings in the AFL draft. Now, if you're new to our videos, we've been covering the AFL draft for the last 2 years. We focus on the Coates Talent League, which is the Victorian development pathway, but we've also had a lot of focus on the sample, the waffle this year as well. So we're across quite a lot of prospects this year. So go back and watch some videos if you want to rate our credibility, but we've had a lot of experience in this scene over the last 2 years. So we're going to give our top 60. We have two separate rankings that we're going to go through, question each other on why we have certain players where they are and why some players might be lower or higher. So without further ado, we're going to get into it. We're going to start with our 60 to 51 rankings, which you'll be able to see on screen now. I'll list through mine. Number 60, I've got Damon Hollow, Charlie Nichols, Reece Unwin, Luke Urquhart, Zach Johnson, Lucas Camporelli, Tyler Welsh, Jordan Doherty, Joel Cochran, and Tom Sims.
I'll list through my 60 to 51, then I'll ask you a couple of questions. So at 60, I've got Luke Kennedy, an underrated midfielder, 59, Reece Unwin, clean, small forward, 58, I've got Sam Toner, a bolter from Dandenong, 57, Charlie Nichols, 56, Blake Lidler, a line-breaking halfback, 55, I've got Cody Anderson, 54, Adrian Cole, a St Kilda NGA prospect, Luca Grego at 53 from the Western Jets, 52, Ben Camporeale, and 51, Ollie Warburton from the Murray Bush Rangers. The one I want to question you on from that first one is probably Jordan Doherty. Where do you see him playing at the next level? He's obviously played a lot of ruck at Coates League, and I just don't think he'd play ruck at AFL, which is why I haven't got him on my list.
Well, he's also had the scope of being playing in the forward line, which is where I've liked him a lot at times. He's very mobile, which I guess gives him the opportunity to move further up the ground. I do have questions having him there in the sense he is 19 years old. You know, he's had that extra year. So I guess if he didn't do it in his first, in his top age year, is there a chance second time around? I do think his forward presence is quite good. He's able to take a good mark inside 50, can pinch it in the ruck. It's not like he'd be incapable at AFL level, but obviously would have less of an impact. Yep. But I do see him finding a spot in the forward line if he does move forward.
Yep. Nah, very, very well argued. I guess Ollie Warburton is probably the other talking point. You've got him unranked. I think he's someone who's clean. He starts his career off halfback and can move into the midfield later, and his career is pretty good on the spread as well, and I think he's quite hardworking. So he probably doesn't have the dynamism of some of the other players, which is why I've got him lower in my rankings, but I think that ball-winning ability and those skills are still transferable to AFL. And then you also had Luca Grego unranked, and I had him at 53. I think he's someone that if you've got a pick after the first two rounds, he's actually quite a safe pick because he doesn't have any glaring weaknesses. Now, he doesn't have any compelling strengths either, and that's why he's being held back. But I think the one thing I'd say about him is if you were to give me Grego and whoever goes pick 20 in the draft, I'd say Grego's more likely to get a contract extension than pick 20 because he's got work rate and professionalism that'll translate onto an AFL list. It's just that pick 20 has scope to be, a Brownlow medalist or go further with their career.
Just to touch on Warburton again, my question was how damaging is he with the footy? I just don't think I saw it enough during the year. He definitely knows how to find the footy. I think there'd still be a lot of development left in him. I should add, in another podcast, we are going to go through a few players who might not be in our rankings, but are certainly still draftable, in the later rounds. And Luca Grego, I guess what put me down for him is his upside. I guess how do you build on a player like that? But I definitely do agree with the impact. You've got a reliable player there. And he showed that at VFL level for Williamstown as well, that he's able to, go into a senior side and play his role really well. I just want to quickly ask you about Luke Kennedy and Blake Lidler. I guess why do they make it in? They haven't been, I guess, in major talks all year, but they've been kind of on the surface and bubbling away. But talk to me about those inclusions.
I think Luke Kennedy's one who's really coachable. I think if he was in a different team, it's been talked about a little bit at Sandy that they've obviously got that midfielder dreams. If he was in a different team, then he would be their lead midfielder. He runs both ways, and I think he kicks it really well. And Blake Lidler's got speed and athleticism that's built for the modern game, as I said. He's had an injury-interrupted year, which has sort of held him back, but I think he's got really good traits to be a good defender at the next level and, you know, set the game up off halfback. Just want to touch on Cody Anderson, Adrian Cole. Like both of those players, unfortunately, because their kicking efficiency lets them down and their skills can be a little bit haphazard at times, I've got them lower than probably the consensus. But, yeah, we move on to 50 to 41.
So my number 50 going up, 50 to 41. I've got Pat Reschke at 50, Cody Anderson, Lenny Hoffman, Gab Stumpf, Xavier Ivicic, Angus Clark, Nathaniel Sulzberger, Josh Murphy, Ben Camporelli, and Ollie Hannaford. Yours?
Yeah, so I've got Jaden Nguyen at 50, Jack Au at 49, Jasper Auger at 48, Gabe Stumpf at 47, Damon Hollow at 46, Lenny Hoffman at 45, Logan Smith at 44, Tyler Welsh at 43, Xavier Ivicic from Geelong at 42, and Sam Davidson, what a story he is from Richmond VFL. He was excellent at the combine as well. I've got him at 41, so I guess a couple that pricked my ears up from that list that you just rattled off, and probably the one that pricked my ears up the most out of your entire list was Ollie Hannaford. Having him so low, it feels like you've been really high on him all year, and what he showed in the final series allowed him to really enter first round discussions, and not only enter them, but he's probably established himself in a lot of people's books as a first round certainty to some degree, and it seems like you've backflipped a little bit. So what's the reasoning for that?
That's weird you think I've backflipped, because I've been massive on him since the end of last year, but I've always said, look, if he's going to have a great season and he's going to prove himself, I don't ever think he was going to break into that top 40, and that's just purely based off his size. I just wonder what you do with him at the next level, because you'll get the productivity from him, but in terms of, you know, what's his set position at the next level? I understand he's a utility. You can put him anywhere. His pressure stacks up at under 18 level. It's a big step up. I know I'll back him, you know, every day of the week. I feel like he's a player you would have loved to see at VFL level in terms of seeing how they adapt to the senior level. I mean, he had those games of 6 and 5 goals, but we saw when Oakley played him again, you put time into him, he's, you know, it's obviously harder for him. So he's a player that, I don't know, you've got to get his positioning right. You have to get his role right at the next level. I couldn't honestly say that he's really pushed his case to be better than the top 30 or better than the top 35, because when we move into it, I just feel like those top 30 players have a unique thing about them, a position at the next level they go straight into. Ollie's still got a lot of development left in him. I think he gets drafted for sure, but that's my decision to have him a bit lower down.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a small forward at the next level. I think the Bo McCreary comparisons have been flying thick and fast at talent pathway level recently, and that's sort of what I see him being, is that real pressure forward that, you know, almost runs faster without the footy, and he's a maniac, and then when he gets it, he's got the goal sense as well, probably more so than what Bo McCreary has got the goal sense. And then I guess the other one was Pat Reschke. I didn't rank him. I love his running ability and he's a great kid as well, but I just couldn't find a spot for him, because I feel like if you're going to be a winger at the next level, which he clearly is, or if he's not a winger, he's a halfback, but regardless, the foot skills really let him down.
But I guess the argument back to that is, how many players have elite foot skills at the next level? Probably a lower percentage. You've got decent foot skills, but I think you can develop that, and for he suits the modern game so well. It's consistent running. I just think you cannot pass up on a player that has that, especially if he goes later on. I guess it's not as much of a risk to pick up that type of player. I think the later the draft goes, the more chance he has, really, because you can take the gamble on that kicking, but you've got someone who's got an elite running capacity. Two things I want to question you on.
Yep.
Jack Au, having him lower down, I guess. Yep. What was the thought process behind that? Because I have him a bit higher up.
Yep.
And Tyler Welsh so high as well. I must question. And Logan Smith, I don't have in my rankings purely because I just think he's a class tap ruckman, but his mobility probably lets him down. But Tyler Welsh and Jack Au.
Yeah, I'll answer all those three. So Jack Au, I'll start with. I just think the big-bodied mids that don't have speed are going out of vogue a little bit. We've seen with Mitch Sivkovski, we've seen with Will Brown as well. I feel like he's got a little bit of that about him. He's really clean, but he doesn't have that explosive athleticism of some of the others. But I still think he gets drafted because he's shown that versatility probably more so than those two players that I touched on that went undrafted in the last couple of years, and I like him off half back as well. He's obviously played on the wing. As for Tyler Welsh, I think he's a momentum shifter. He's someone that can turn a game in 10 minutes. He's so good one-on-one, and he's quite powerful as well. So, yeah, he's probably been a little bit up and down, hasn't played that full game or had that full block month of form like an Ollie Hannaford has, but I've still got him there. And Logan Smith is the academy ruck, like you talked about. Great tap ruckman. I think the way I looked at ruckman in this rankings is there's not many of them in this draft, so I think every one of them is going to go higher than perhaps what they would ordinarily go. And it's basic supply and demand. If there's not many of them, then clubs have to pounce on them a little bit earlier. But I have still liked him, and I think when he played in the talent league earlier in the season, he was one of his team's most consistent players. So I think his productivity's been pretty good. And I'm just going to touch on Jasper Auger as well. Excellent, yeah. Athletically, very good at the combine, and he's got away around goals, but I just question whether he's good enough at ground level for a small forward, because it feels like a lot of his goals come from set shots. He's obviously really good overhead, but if you were to put a dynamic small back on him, I feel like he'd get beaten at AFL level at this stage. But we'll move to our 40 to 31.
Well, he's in my next block of players, so my number 40 going up to 31: Malachi Champion, Adrian Cole, Lockie Jakes, Hamish Davis, Jack Au, Noah Meraz, Archie Day Wicks, Jasper Olga, Floyd Burmeister, and Sam Marshall.
Yep. And then I have got Floyd Burmeister at 40, Archie Day Wicks at 39, Joel Cochran, Tom Sims from the Northern Knights, Hamish Davis from WA, Nathaniel Sulzberger at 35, Lockie Jakes, James Barrett, Harry Oliver, and Harry O'Farrell at 31, the Calder key defender.
My first question probably lies with the Archie Day Wicks discussion. Yep. We both got him in this range, and We spoke about this a bit on Combine Day, I guess. What's his projection? We've talked about him a lot as, a very athletic player. His combine testing probably wasn't as ideal to suit that.
No, it wasn't, was it?
Term of phrase. But I guess do you truly think he gets drafted around that range? I mean,
yeah.
His season as well, you watched a bit more of him than I did. So what's his projection at this point of time?
Yeah, and I would say he is a bargain if he falls to 39, which I think he will. But I think a little bit like what you said with Ollie Hannaford, although I disagree with you about Ollie Hannaford, I use the same argument with Archer Day Wicks, where he is a very good player, but I just couldn't put him any higher because of some players who have just gone past him with how good their years are and how well they project. He's a player that can play forward at the next level, and he can play in the mid, even play on a wing as well. But I think he's got that athleticism and physicality and that way around goals as well. He's someone a little bit like what I said about Tyler Welsh. You can sort of turn a game in 10 minutes, and I think his finish to the season really showed that he's a player of substance, which I think I've talked about, rather than just being that player that floats in and out when it's sort of there to be won or something like that. He's someone who can actually play a full game because he's got that physicality and want for the contest, which we probably didn't see earlier in the year. But I guess what I'd question you on is having Malachi Champion so high. So he didn't rank for me. I don't think he goes in the top 60. I think he probably goes as a very late pick or a rookie. But, yeah, I just don't see what his point of difference is when it comes to small forwards.
Well, I got to watch quite a bit of him. I watched one of his Waffle senior games for Subiaco, and I think I watched one of his under-18 games as well. He's a small forward that I guess his downside is he doesn't impact for four quarters. He'll usually have his burst, but he's so damaging. And whilst his endurance is quite poor, that speed he possesses, he's a weapon in transition. And the amount of times he burnt off his opponents, he'd push up to the defensive 50 and he'd start runs going forward and burn them off by a good 10 metres. He has that ability to find space and hit the scoreboard in quick succession. He did it at the senior level, which I think was really important. I mean, we haven't seen as much of that opportunity for, your Victorian small forwards to have that opportunity at senior level. So in terms of it, is someone that's damaging, he understand his goal sense is on. I guess you're just looking athletically. He might not be as gifted, but he's definitely got that footy nous about him. So I couldn't really not rank him. He's definitely got potential at the next level. And I'm sure, I think it's the Eagles Academy that's one of the two. That'll take him up. Two more before we move on for you. And these are two we had in different spots, Cochran and Sims.
Yep.
My digs on them were, Cochran was more his kicking at times, I worry. Sims is his versatility. Where do you put him when he's not a key forward? What do you do with him? You solely rely on his kicking your goals and taking marks, because when he's not, you've lost a forward there. So I guess what was the decision to have those two a bit higher up?
Yeah, I'll start with Joel Cochran. I just think his size and his consistency throughout the year is what I kind of thought. You know what you're going to get with him to some degree. And a little bit like I said with the rucks, I think when you're that tall, he's someone who is naturally going to be taken a little bit earlier or viewed upon quite highly. And Tom Sims, I think his contested marking's been very good. He's got underrated athleticism as well. I know you talked about that throughout the year, and I've really enjoyed his rate of improvement. As for his lack of versatility, I just think he's a forward at the next level, and that's clear.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think maybe it would have been nice to see him go down back a little bit. But yeah, to me, if you're drafting him, you're clearly drafting him as a forward, and he's shown pretty good form there. And the other one, just to quickly touch on, Floyd Burmeister, we've probably both got him higher than the consensus. Like I said, rucks will naturally go a little bit higher, but I think he's got untapped potential. Some clubs see him as a ruck, some as a key forward. And yeah, although he didn't have that massive game this year, I think you see the spurts when he runs and jumps at the footy that not many other players have because of the way he's built.
He is a development project. Should add, these are not draft rankings. So these are not where we think they'll go in the draft. These are solely power rankings, because obviously someone like Tom Sims, you know, a club's in a demand for key forward. He might go a bit higher than we expect. So go now 30 to 21. So start with my 30 upwards. Cooper Hines at 30, Alec Dodson, Harry Armstrong, James Barrett, Jonty Fall, Harry O'Farrell, Harry Oliver, Christian Moraes, Tom Gross, and Jack Whitlock.
Yep, and then I'll say mine. So Noah Moraes at 30, Christian Moraes at 29, Jonty Fall, Tom Gross, Isaac Kakko at 26, the Essendon NGA, Alex Dodson at 25, Jesse Dottoli at 24, Ollie Hannaford, Harry Armstrong, and Matt Whitlock. I guess the clear talking point for both of us here is we've both put Harry Armstrong very low. I think a lot of people have him as the best key forward in this draft class. You put him right down at 27 or 28, and I've got him at 22, but I'll ask for your reasons and then I'll give mine.
Well, I think his impact is the highest. I should add, I had three categories ranking these players, which was upside, impact, and their general versatility. His impact was quite high. It was in the nines, nine plus, you're pretty much an A plus in that category. So when he goes in, he'll find your goals. Again, similar to Sims, it's just his range. We never really saw him get a roll down back at all. We saw that with Jobe Shanahan, who we'll touch on a bit later. So I feel like there's that opportunity to give him a bit more development in other areas was lost. Again, similar with Sims. You know what you're getting from a player like that. But I don't know. His size as well, he's a little smaller than I think what it comes across. So you put him on a bigger opponent, be interesting to see how he goes. But he does win his battles. He knows how to win his one-on-ones. That was probably my reasoning. And I mean, it's hard. But again, he could easily go top 20.
And he probably does.
A club does need, you know, a club needs a key forward. But in terms of the players above him, I just think, again, provide a little more versatility at the next level and offer a little more.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about versatility because, yeah, I mean, like Sims, I just think if you're drafting him, you're clearly drafting him as a key forward, and that's what his position's going to be at the next level. We've seen how well he plays at that position. For me, there are a couple of things I took into consideration. The size element that you talked about, the Whitlocks are both taller than him, so they're both a touch higher than him. They turn into forwards that you can definitely build your forward line around and build your team around. The fact that every team he played in, he was getting silver service from the midfield. So Halebury, Sandringham and Vic Metro always would win the midfield battle. So that gave him silver service. And yeah, you're right, he would usually win his one-on-ones, but I felt like he always had a size advantage that he's not necessarily going to have at the next level with the players that he was playing on. Sometimes he'd get the best key defenders, but sometimes the best key defenders would go to Archie Ludewijk, who's six centimetres taller than him, or the tallest key defenders would go to Archie Ludewijk. So I also have some questions over whether he would, if he was to have played VFL this year like Jobe Shanahan had, would his competitiveness have stacked up the same way that Jobe Shanahan's did? And obviously Jobe Shanahan has played some senior footy at Moama, so that helped him, with which obviously Harry Armstrong hasn't had the opportunity to do. Isaac Kakko, I'll touch on. The reason I had him at 26, lower than a few other forwards. So I had Ollie Hannaford above him. I had Joe Berry and I had Charge Houghton by way of small forwards above him. Just the athleticism, how does that translate to the next level? And you've talked about that, I think, a little bit as well. That's the reason that he's a little bit lower for me. And I think he's someone that, yeah, you can shut down a little bit easier than the others. And the others probably can have a little bit more midfield impact than what Isaac Kakko can. And that's about it.
I just want to... Where do you have Jonty for?
I had him at 28.
An interesting comparison. And I had him at 26 above Harry Armstrong purely because, okay, I've questioned Jonty's, you know, one-on-one at times where it's really contested, he struggles. But we've seen him push up the ground a lot more. He offers a bit more height further up the ground, so that's where I'd have him there. Christian Moraes and Tom Gross are two in mind that I think are interesting to have him that low. I think those are players. You start getting to that 20 to 25 area, I think they become some quite good players.
Yeah.
That slip down low there. So that was my kind of wrap up. Do you want to move to the 20 now?
No, I'll quickly give my reasoning. So I think Jonty Fall, you touched on it really well. He's so good long down the line and he presents that option sort of outside 50 presence, if that's what you want to call it. We saw it on grand final day. He was probably one of GWV's better players and didn't kick a goal because he got so high. And I think his final series, he showed what he needed to put those doubts around his contested marking to bed for me. Christian Moraes, for me, I had him at 29, plateaued a little bit, and there's a couple of reasons for that, but I think he just sort of struggled at senior footy in the AFL Academy game and in the VFL game as well. So how does that translate? It will eventually, but not immediately. He'll certainly be an exciting wingman for many years, I think. But there is just that little question mark, and he probably didn't have the champs we expected him to have. So after such a good bottom age year and reasonable form for Eastern, they were probably held back a little bit by what he did at the next level in Champs, AFL Academy and the VFL. And Tom Gross, tough and has X Factor, so I had him at 27. But we'll move on to the 22-11.
So 20 going up, I've got Matt Whitlock at 20, Jesse Dottoli, Luke Traynor, Isaac Kakko, Job Shanahan, Joe Berry, Bo Allen, Taj Hodden, Sam Lawler and Xavier Lindsay.
And then I've got Jack Whitlock at 20, Sam Marshall at 19, Cooper Hines at 18, Taj Houghton, Joe Berry, Bo Allen from WA at 15, Toby Trevallier at 14, Luke Traynor at 13, Xavier Lindsay at 12, and Sid Draper at 11. Let's touch on Sam Marshall. You had him in the 30s. I've got him right in the first round. I think as a midfielder, he's someone, in some ways similar to Luke Kennedy, where he probably gets overshadowed by those bigger personalities in that midfield, but he just gets it done week after week with his ball winning, with the way he covers the ground so well, with the contests he gets to and his spread as well.
Yeah, look, I do think my ranking is unfair. I think just my thought is, and I 100% agree, and that's the thing. He goes into Brisbane, he slots in, he does his job.
Yeah,
he's,
I think,
good.
He will.
It's very Will Ashcroft type, where you know what you're going to get, a ball winner who can be damaging, you know, in transition, especially offensively. That's why he's at 31. I don't think he's the 31st best player. He's definitely had a better season than quite a few that are above him, but I think it's just the fact that you know where he's ending up, you know what you're going to get. It's like, where he goes doesn't matter in this sense of a power rankings or a draft ranking. So I agree. I have him lower, but I don't read into it too much. It's just a matter of you know what you're going to get.
He's that sort of player.
It's boring in a good way.
Yeah.
Like, he's that type of player.
I guess the next one, Cooper Hines, is another one I had probably right at the higher end of his range and you had right at the lower end of his range. For me, his power and goal sense and his ability to win clearances is so, so impressive. And the conditioning that was the question mark coming into the year, he answered that, you know, in spades. And, you know, you give Harvey Langford an inch to talk about him and he'll take a mile. He did it last week at the Combine when he was addressing the media. He got a little opportunity to talk about Cooper Hines at the press conference, talked about him for, you know, 30 seconds. And I think the way Dandenong have played them, you know, one in the midfield, one up forward, and then they'll swap. And you don't lose anything for Dandenong when you've got Cooper Hines in the midfield and Harvey Langford up forward and vice versa. It feels like they're both almost just as good as each other, but obviously Harvey Langford projects a little bit better. So I've really loved his season. I've probably watched a little bit more of him than you, but you had him, I think, in the 30s as well.
I had him at 30. He's a really hard one to rank because I agree that he's got that power, that natural goal sense, but we saw at times he can not go missing. He just has really off patches where you don't really see his involvement in the game. And that's kind of what's, I feel like, has let him down in these rankings a little bit. Just that ability to impact across the four quarters. But when he gets going, he gets going. I do think he projects. He's one who, when you talk about projecting well at the next level,
yep,
he'd be up there in your top 10 almost. That's how good his season has been. But I just think when I'm ranking him off the season so far, based off what I've got, I think it's just that consistency I've questioned, and it might rank him a little lower. But
yeah,
I think he definitely can fall where you have him. He can fall really in anywhere between that period.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
he's an interesting one to compare to a few names above, like Christian Moraes, Harry Oliver. Like, he's arguably had better seasons nearly than these two players, and he, you know, how do you assess that going into the draft? It'd be quite interesting. The only real question I have with you, with your 20 to 11, is Toby Trevallier, and I have him at 9, which we'll talk about, but how have you seen his season? Like, where does he go? Because he's one that probably projects the best in terms of modern game at the next level. He's got that explosiveness,
yeah,
that run. Do you think he's that? What is he? Your 12th? Is he 12th?
He's 14th for me.
Is he the 14th best player, do you reckon, out of this draft? Because I feel like he goes a lot higher come actual draft night, just based off the asset that he is.
Yeah, I think he is the 14th best player. I think he's had a pretty perfect season.
Yep.
And I think in terms of when you think about his skill set and how well he's executed that skill set this year, I think there's few that have been better. Like, you talk about someone like a Josh Smiley, who's that big-bodied, yep, speedy clearance winner. And then you talk about Toby Trevallier, who's so competitive and so good overhead, and he's run and dash. You've seen all of those traits from Toby Trevallier a lot more than what you've seen those traits from Josh Smiley, if that makes sense. But I think he's quite a unique prospect, because there's not many, if any, players in the AFL that are built the way he's built, but he just makes it work and he just oozes class. So I really like him. I couldn't put him above anyone else, because I think for me there was a very clear top 11, and then there was a little bit of a gap to the next ones. So, yeah, and he was right at the top of the next bracket, I suppose. Sid Draper being at 11 is probably the curious one for a lot of people, because he's been in pick one conversations at different times this year, and I knew there was going to be someone in my upper echelon that was going to fall out of the top 10 and raise some eyebrows, because, yeah, when I first wrote it down, there were 11 names in that top echelon, and, yeah, one's clearly going to fall out of the top 10. He hasn't had a bad year. I think the way he projects is absolutely outstanding. He's got leadership written all over him as well. He just falls a little bit because, for me, there's just others that have made an irresistible case this year, and I just had to put them ahead of him. But if he was to fall to 11, that'd be a massive bargain. And I guess the fact he's a midfielder as well, there's a lot of midfielders in that top 10. So I think you'll naturally find that the couple of key position players that are seen as the best in this draft, and Harry Armstrong's probably one of them, are going to go a little bit higher than him, even though I've got Harry Armstrong a little bit lower. But whoever clubs see as that key position player to take will mean that there will be a midfielder or two that probably falls a little bit lower, because you're not going to have a midfielder made up of just top 10s.
Sorry, no, you go.
I was just going to say, we both had Xavier Lindsay quite high.
I was just going to say that with Draper, the one game I watched that I reckon would have changed your opinion was his senior game against Port Adelaide, playing for South Adelaide. It's just that center of, I mean, he can go so low. He's so quick and dashing. He can hit the scoreboard as well. You know, he's very damaging with his speed inside 50. That really impressed me, that senior game, to show that the only downfall I have on him sometimes, it's his center stoppage ability. He doesn't get his hands on it as quickly, so he's not, you know, first hands on the footy type, but I think you can live with that at the next level. You can, you know, you draft that players around him that can do that. So he is in my top 10, which will move now to our top 10 to finish this video. So I've got Alex Taru at 10, Toby Trevallier, Harvey Laneford, Murphy Reid, Sid Draper, Leo Lombard, Josh Smiley, Finno Sullivan, Jagger Smith, and as you can see on screen, my number one is Levi Ashcroft.
And then I've got Jobe Shanahan at number 10, Leo Lombard from the Gold Coast Academy at 9, Alex Taru, the best key position player in this draft, for mine at 8, Murphy Reid at 7, Levi Ashcroft at 6, Harvey Laneford at 5, Sam Lawler from GWV at 4, Jagger Smith and Finno Sullivan, and then Josh Smiley at number 1, who I haven't wavered on all year. He remains at number 1 for me, controversially.
Well, let's start with the number 1s and our decision-making behind that. And I'm the same. I haven't moved off Levi as number 1. He obviously Not obviously might not go at number one unless someone bids on him, but it doesn't usually happen. Yeah. But I think it's consistency. I mean, he's done it from 16 years old, 15 even, when you go back to those first games at Sandy. His ability to impact just consistently, he's built on his game. The downsides of his game, I guess, are that aggression. It can be a bit too much sometimes. But again, a hard one to rank when you look, you know where he's going. There's not really a lot to look at there, but he projects so well. I always have said I do think he's a better player than Will in terms of his range. Will's a bit limited. You can't put him inside the forward 50 as often. He's just kind of roving, but Levi goes in. He's a half forward. He's a, you know, he can play so many different type of roles. He's a consistent ball winner and reliable as well at that. So I couldn't get off him at number one. For you, Josh Smiley.
Yeah, people who speak to me are probably sick of hearing this phrase, but it's how I settle on Josh Smiley at number one. And the reason that I won't waver off him is because if I was to look at every pick one contender and you were to ask me who's the most likely to be a generational talent, I would say Josh Smiley by a fair margin as well. And that's not the only thing you take into consideration, because you don't want to take a massive gamble at pick one and it backfires. But I think the talk about him having a poor year is a narrative that's been talked about too much. I think his clearance winning is second to none. His athletic profile is comparable to Patrick Cripps, Marcus Bontempelli. We saw that on testing day. His 20-metre sprint was excellent for a big-bodied mid, very agile as well, and he's got a good leap on him. His 2K time trial was, I didn't think it was that good on the day, but it was quite strong in terms of time as well. So that shows how well-conditioned he is, and he can go inside 50, take a mark. So he's that prototypical big-bodied mid that can become a star of the AFL. And I guess to compare him to Levi Ashcroft, who I had a number six and you had a number one, I just think that his ceiling, Levi Ashcroft's, is a little bit lower, because he's going to be a star midfielder. And he's going to be the sort of player that's going to be so consistent, and he's someone who might end up winning a Brownlow medal in his career. But I do question whether he, you know, there's so many midfielders in this draft. In terms of points of difference, I feel like Josh Smiley has that a little bit more. So
just looking at Laneford now, you've got him at five, I've got him at eight. He's a really odd one. His senior performance was for Richmond. Just need to remember that, but he did struggle a little bit at the senior level, just adapting to that. I just wonder his impact instantly. I think you're taking a quite long-term player there with Laneford, so he's a interesting one where he'll go, because if you're at the top of the order, he's a player you know will come in and just tickle on really well.
He will.
So that's probably only one I just want to discuss there. And Leo Lombard as well. You've got him a little lower. After the weekend as well. I have him at five, you have him at eight?
I've got him at nine. So yeah, no, we'll start with Harvey Laneford. And I've said this a lot this year, but I just think if you're going to take a midfielder in your top couple, they need to have speed. That's just the way the game's played. And I think we saw on testing day that, speed isn't one of his strengths. So I wouldn't classify it as a weakness either, but it's not a trait you immediately associate with him. So that's the reason that he falls a little bit, but he's had a great year. Leo Lombard at number nine. I actually thought I rated him quite highly, but then, you've obviously got him at five, I think. But, he just doesn't get the talk he deserves. Him, Bo Allen and Sid Draper, because they're not in Victoria, I feel like they're sort of out of sight, out of mind a little bit in the footy bubble. But what he has done for Gold Coast VFL is absolutely sensational. To come in as a, 16, 17-year-old and win a premiership, his ability to escape from stoppage is first class. And we saw on testing day how agile he is, how quick he is, and I think he's going to be a long-term prospect for the Gold Coast Suns, and he could come in next year and play, no questions about it.
Well, you know what I liked about him as well on testing day? We spoke to him for a little media bit, and what I loved is that he was quite honest with what he needs to improve on, and that has been his deficiency. He just can do too much at times. He can be over-aggressive, and it can show in his ball usage. He can
turn it over. Decision-making, didn't he?
But it was just more that doing too much sometimes, and he's very, open with that. That's what he needs to improve. I think just understanding where your weaknesses lie. I think he was the first. I was like, wow, okay. You really understand where you need to go. I think a few players can kind of get lost in how good they are naturally, and not focus on what they need to improve on as much. But I love that about him. Yeah, his senior performance has been terrific.
Joe Shanahan at number 10 for me.
Yeah,
controversial having him that high. But he has done it all. What more could he have done? You know, he gets double teamed when he's playing senior footy locally. He's gone and played VFL, averaged more than 3 goals a game. He, at Bendigo, gets the best key defender every week. And, you know, if you're a Bendigo player, you know, you just sort of put it up inside 50 and Jobe Shanahan's going to take a contested mark. I think when you compare him to other key forwards, he's someone who can take a contested mark from the front of the pack, from the middle of the pack, coming in from the side, from the back. He beats the best defender most weeks. He runs well. He flies at the footy. He's so good below his knees as well for someone of his size. I just don't think there is a downside. And if you were to profile the perfect forward to come to your club and take marks inside 50 and be the player to build it around, I think Jobe Shanahan is the answer, and character stacks up really well as well.
Yeah, I have him at 16, but I do think needs-wise he will go higher than that in this draft. I mean, his Essendon VFL performances were elite. To kick 11 goals over 4 games is not something that an 18-year-old can do very often. At the next level, Jagger and Foss, I mean, I was
just going to touch on that.
Just the last two to kind of wrap up with.
So, I mean, I think it'd be an interesting storyline if what I think should happen does happen. Smiley at 1, O'Sullivan at 2, because they've both probably had years that don't tend to go 1 and 2.
Yeah,
but
true.
No, I think Finn O'Sullivan's just, he's one of those players, he doesn't need as much of the footy as what the others do to really impact. Or I think Jagger feels like he needs 30 touches to really make his authority felt on a game. Finn O'Sullivan's ability to move, he's like an ice skater. I think that analogy's been used by someone else, but yeah, I'm going to run with it. And yeah, so I've got him just a little bit above Jagger, obviously Jagger at 3.
Yeah, I think I agree with the Foss statement. I mean, my question is still the injury thing. I mean, he was on and off for the end of the season. I don't know how much that's been downplayed, if that actually is a bigger issue than what we think. So I just worry a little bit, the conditioning side of things at the senior level. How does he go transitioning? Does he play straight away, or does he need a bit of time to get his body properly right? And then Jagger, for reliability, I'd be surprised if Richmond don't take him.
Given
the stage they're in and rebuilding, you just want players who are going to do their job pretty well. But yeah, that about wraps it up.
Just one more I want to ask you about.
It's not wrapping up. Let's go.
Sam Lawler, you had him quite low.
Oh, yes.
And
yes,
I had him at number 4. I think he's a game changer in this draft, and as big a game changer as anyone with, his power. You had him at 10 or 11. You're just
I had him at 12 again. 12, injury. Wow. I'm just it's putting me off a few players, the injury problems they've had throughout the year. And just a bit like had the hamstring at the back of last year. When was it? I think the end of last year as well. He was injured. I mean, do you have to take that into account? Because I feel like you really do, especially hamstring injuries
can really
get you worried. But I love the type of player he is. I've always, just every time you watch him, he's an excitement factor. We saw that in that Vic Country, Vic Metro game, what he can produce. I think it's just that. I genuinely think it's the injury risk that will put him a little lower than a few of these players, because, I mean, you could say the same for Foss, really, but I think obviously Foss has produced it a little more consistently over the last 2 years. I mean, Lawler only got out of the cricket stage, you know, when he was 17. So, I do think he'll be the one that can kind of slip down and be a real steal, but, it is the injury for me. Now, that is it. That is finally it. We're going to have Dylan Alexander on the podcast in a few weeks' time. So for a bit more club analysis, we will be having that in a few weeks. So stay tuned on the channel. Go to our socials on Instagram for a lot more fun content. Jonty's been talking to players, and we've got a few nice video short film documentaries coming out later, closer to the draft. So make sure to stay tuned for that, and we will see you next week.